You're listening to the Physics Ed Podcast. For hundreds of ideas, free experiments and more, go to physicseducation.com.au. And now, here's your host, Ben Newsome.
Yes, welcome again to another Physics Ed Podcast. This episode's a little different. Hundreds of educators and innovators got down to Melbourne for a very special event called EduChange, which is a three-day event where highly motivated people work together to solve some real challenges that face us in education. It was EduChange. It was EC17. And I tell you, it was certainly an awesome event. Holly Kershaw got to go down there, and in between running science experiments and presenting at EduChange, she got to have a chat with some seriously inspiring people, and really, you get to hear them. They are making a real difference. Let's learn what she found out, starting with someone who helped put it all together.
This is the Physics Ed Podcast.
All right, Dave, you're looking very excited. Can you tell anyone who doesn't know who you are, what you do, why you do it?
So I'm Dave Faulkner from Education Changemakers. I find clever teachers, help them do their job better all around the world. It's a lot of fun. I've got an amazing team who I do that with.
Yeah, so Dave is the CEO of the amazing organisation that's put on this event that we are all having a blast at. Dave, what's the most exciting thing that's happened in the last 2 days?
Well, I think there's been lots of exciting things, but for me, probably the most exciting thing is just getting in like small groups and talking with incredible educators that are from right across the world and just riffing new ideas and coming up with things that, stealing ideas that might be able to change the game for kids here in Australia and anywhere around the world.
Is there any idea that's come that's like completely from left field or completely unexpected from a conversation you've had in the last couple of days?
Yeah, I reckon the one that's like left of field for me is like we had dogs in here and I was like, what if you did have a dog in every classroom? Like what difference would that make to the behaviour and the well-being of kids? I think that'd be pretty cool, like to have a dog in a classroom. Right? So I was like, that's kind of weird, but like watching how people have interacted with that, it should have made sense before this, but actually now I'm looking at it going, that could actually like change the game, not just for kids with, learning difficulties or those things, but for every kid.
Yeah, that's really, really cool. Now, Dave, just one more thing. If you had to give a piece of advice to a young educator who's sort of just starting out or starting to try and make change, what would you tell them?
I would say to them, find people that fill you with joy and happiness. Find those teachers that support you and avoid the happiness vacuums, people who suck the life out of you and tell you that it's all bad and it's doom and gloom, because actually it's the best profession on earth.
Excellent. Thanks so much, Dave.
I'm Eleanor Wood. I'm the head of science at Camberwell Girls Grammar School. I do it because I love science and I love communicating that with kids.
Excellent. What was your like path to getting into this place where you're now the head of science?
Yeah, I kind of always wanted to be a teacher and then just, went to uni and started along that pathway, taught in Queensland for a couple of years and then got an amazing opportunity to work for CyroEd. And I did their outreach program for a year, then got enticed to Europe, went over there, worked in London in a very interesting school and academy, lots of deprivation, lots of challenges, loved it but detested the school system. So came back home eventually after 11 years I'd been out of Melbourne, walked back in and ended up back in science teaching down the road at Carey, and then couldn't deal with it anymore. I wanted to run my own department, so I found this job and was lucky enough to get the opportunity to do that.
Yeah, awesome. Do you have any like really cool projects you want to tell us about?
I'm currently redeveloping our curriculum for year 7 to 10 science. So I don't have to, as being a part of an independent school, I don't have to stay with the Victorian curriculum to the letter. I get a lot more freedom. So we're doing a lot more project-based learning and kind of getting them into a makerspace attitude where they get to play around with stuff. So we just finished an electricity unit and then they built their own toy or wearable circuit at the end of it, just to kind of make that electricity part, which is often a little bit dry, a little bit more interesting. We did a unit on molecular gastronomy where we made, failed an attempt to make dry ice ice cream, and ended up with fruit caviar as well, all that kind of stuff. So it's been really, really fun, but quite challenging.
Yeah, cool. I can hear stuff starting off, so you probably want to run off. So if you had to give an early starting out teacher one piece of advice, what would you tell them?
put your hand up for things. Just try it and see what you like, because you never know where it's going to take you.
I'm here with Kirsty from Cool Australia. Kirsty, can you tell us like what you do, who you are and why you do it?
Sure. So I'm the Head of Professional Development at Cool Australia. We support 70,000 teachers across Australia with implementing stuff that's happening outside of the classroom and bringing it into their curriculum. So we focus on lots of different topics like Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders, histories and cultures, health and wellbeing, sustainability, social equity, you name it. So anything that really answers that question for students when they ask, why are we learning this? So we really try and make learning relevant. We're not for profit, and pretty much everything we provide is free. So we collaborate with lots of different people and allow them to, you know, help us build some resources and so that teachers don't have to pay. And, yeah, it's a really amazing time to be in education, and we're really excited about what we're doing.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So what about your resources make those issues relevant to kids? Like, what do you do to sort of like nail down that relevance so that they get it?
It's a really great question. Well, we use lots of different like contemporary pedagogies for teachers. So we look at things like design thinking, inquiry learning. But what we do is we say to teachers that exceptional learning isn't that you have to have a whole unit say on the environment, but you can actually use it to teach maths lessons. So instead of, like, I remember that old maths lesson that I used to have when I was a kid, just like, you know, there's a train travelling from New York at 30 kilometres an hour and John gets off and Betty gets on and how many people are left. And I've never been to New York and I've never been on a train. So we show teachers and help teachers use the tools around them and the environment around them. So whether it's out in the schoolyard, measuring schoolyard, or just really showing students what they're doing and why it's important and how they can sort of apply it in lots of different contexts. So that's sort of what we do with all different sorts of topics. So we look at how students can be active citizens and use their critical and creative thinking to not only problem solve, but also find problems that they want to solve in their own life and their own world, and help teachers give them the tools that they can do to solve that.
Yeah, awesome. What has been the most exciting thing you've seen at EC17 this week?
Oh, it's been so amazing so far. I think that besides some of the people on the stage, I love Lucy Clark and her amazing book about beautiful failures and what the education system should be thinking about doing to support people like her daughter who are really struggling through school. But I actually feel like the most inspiring thing's just been talking to lots of different people, hearing people's stories, hearing about the sorts of things that people are doing. I've met people from Brisbane and Adelaide and Melbourne and Sydney, and I think it's really important in a conference like this to see that this is actually an Australian and a global movement around thinking about where we need to take education in a really quickly changing world. And I think that's been the most inspiring part for me.
Yeah, that's so cool. Now, if you could give a young educator, someone starting out in education, one piece of advice, what would you tell them?
I'd tell them that teaching and learning is messy, and that it's okay to embrace failures and successes both at a teaching level and a student level. I think sometimes I remember when I came out of teaching and I felt like I needed to kind of get it right the first time. And actually, when I stopped in the middle of a lesson when I realised it wasn't working, and I said to my students openly, hey, this is not really working, is it? And they all went, no, and we sort of rethought it. That's when the really rich learning took place. So I think it's about, you know, being confident to take risks, being okay with any mistakes that you make along the way and learn from them, and then be able to create that sort of culture in your classroom as well.
Hi everyone, I'm Steffi Salazar. I'm an instructional coach at John Purchase Public School, and my friends are walking past right now. I really developed a capacity of staff at my school, but I have a particular passion for supporting new teachers.
Cool. And when you mean by like instructional, what do you do? Like, what is that physical part of your job entail?
Okay, so I have created a coaching program based on Jim Knight's coaching process, and basically I develop a relationship with staff in my school. We go and look at the reality of what's going on in their classroom, so I'll do a lot of video recording, and from there we set up goals together. And what I love about coaching compared to mentoring is it's more of an equal partnership. You know, I'm not more experienced, you know, I'm coaching people with 30 years more experience than me, so I don't pretend that I know more than them. And basically together we learn about what we can do to improve their practice. So I may model lessons, we may co-teach, we may do a bit of reading, and we just experiment together and learn together, really.
And, like, what led you to, like, take that up? Like, how did you end up in the role that you're in?
Honestly, I decided to go back to uni this year and do my master's while being a lecturer and a tutor. I know, it's a lot of things. But my principal was like, had to think of something to do with me while I was at school part-time, and so she came up with, from her reading about instructional coaching, she thought that I had the right skills for it, and she asked me if I wanted to do it. She gave me two books to read by Jim Knight, and I fell in love and I loved the role. So now I'm a full-time instructional coach.
That is super awesome. So EC17 has been a really fantastic event. What's the most exciting thing you've seen or done whilst you've been here?
Forming the new teacher tribe. Honestly, like, yes, Ashanti, like, you know, blew my mind, and I was bawling my eyes out listening to him. But after that, my new teacher tribe is just forming and it's growing, and not just with new teachers, but experienced teachers who are passionate about supporting new teachers came along to my workshops. And when we were ideating, I said, let's come up with actions. And then I said, after they formed their ideas, next, I made them flip their paper over and I said, now this is where you come up with original ideas and go. And then they came up with things like care packages for new teachers so that they know they're appreciated and are on the right track, and reverse mentoring. So new teachers actually help experienced teachers understand how to mentor them and what they need. And it was just like brilliant. We came up with a mission statement, vision statement collectively, and we're just so keen to form this new teacher tribe and make sure all new teachers feel supported no matter where they are.
Yeah, I think that supporting new teachers is really, really important given like the attrition rate. Yeah. New teachers just not making it 5 years.
Yes,
so
exactly.
You're doing some really, really fantastic stuff. So given that it's right up your alley, what piece of advice would you give a young teacher if you had to sit them down and just say in one or two sentences, what would you tell them?
Well, I would say don't be afraid to ask for help. There's so many people willing to help you. So go to events, go on Twitter, and just connect. And don't be afraid to say, hey, I need some help.
Yeah, find your tribe.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, thank you for chatting to me. It's been
thank
awesome.
Thank you.
Ashanti Branch from Oakland, California. And I run a mentoring program called Ever Forward, Siempre Adelante. It's a mentoring program for young people in grade 6 through 12. And our aim is to address the dropout rate in our schools by providing resources for young people and for adults to have deeper connections.
Yeah, awesome. And how did you get to start this?
Well, I was a first-year teacher, and I was failing. And, you know, I had left an engineering career, so I left a lot of money back there and became a teacher out of total of my heart in the work, but I wasn't doing a good job. And so I invited some young men to lunch, and I said, I'll buy you lunch once a week. In exchange for lunch, teach me how to be a better teacher. And that was the premise of how it started. And those lunch conversations became the Ever Forward Club. I was not trying to start a nonprofit. I think if you told me I was starting a nonprofit at that time, I would have said, that doesn't sound like a good idea.
I think the best ideas are ones that happen completely accidentally because you're just following your heart and it just leads you down this crazy path. Do you have a quick like example of an awesome young man that you've mentored and made like a, you know, a big change in? Or
yeah, it's going to be a little longer than I expected.
That's
but,
okay.
So one young man, a PE teacher, he knew I was running this program. He said, I have a young man who never dresses for PE. I think you should meet him. He may be good for your program. I said, well, I'll bring him by during my prep period. He comes by. It's safe.
That's physics people in the background. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's awesome. He brought the young man by and he introduced him. He said, hey, this is Jaime. And he looked at me. The boy just looked at the ground. And I said, hey, I want to shake your hand. And so he gives me his hand, kind of limp wrist. And I was like, it's like a wet rag. I said, hey, shake my hand for real. Squeeze my hand. And then he looked at me like kind of like no one had ever pushed him, engaged him. Like, mm-hmm. So he squeezed my hand pretty strong. I said, nice, handshake. He said, come on in. So the PE teacher left and I started asking him questions, just getting to know him. And I was doing work, so I wasn't going to stand there face-to-face with him. I wasn't like his therapist. I was just like a teacher meeting a kid. So I'm doing work in my room. And at one point, I remember looking at him, and he was, like, crying. Like, and I was like, okay, I asked, like, 85 questions already. I don't know which one hit that button. And so I said, oh, I need to pay more attention. So I went and sat down next to him, and I said, is that about your mom, right? Because I asked him who he lives with, the uncle, and then it was about his mom. His mom had passed recently. And he was dealing with a lot of sadness about that. But in his family, he was told that boys don't cry, suck it up, man up. And so he's like carrying around this baggage and he just went into like a deep depression. And so I said, man, let it out. Let it out right here, like let it out. And literally, he cried right there for probably 20 minutes. the next day, came back, had another session. And for like a couple of weeks, every day he would come after school, he would like look at me. I would look at him and he'd be like, kind of like, yeah, I need to go. And we would go to the other room and he had a moment just to like, and I think he just never had a chance to grieve the sadness of losing his mom. And as an adult, as an adult old man, I can't, if I think about losing my mom, I get tears in my eyes right now. And so I just was there for him.
Yeah.
And that young man, his life absolutely turned around, you know, but he needed to get some of that stuff out of his system.
Yeah.
You know, he was doing a lot of self-harm, a lot of some things that were dangerous. And I love that kid. He's now in the United States Marine Corps. He's doing really good. He's just got a promotion. So I'm really proud of him. He kind of like became my godson, you know?
Yeah.
More than just me being a mentor for him. He became like a part of my life. And so I think that young people sometimes are just looking for someone to see them and ask them some questions.
Yeah.
Even if I'm asking you personal questions.
And that just that permission to be vulnerable and that permission to just say, you know, I'm not okay.
Yeah.
Is just amazing. That's so cool. Thank you for sharing that story. What has been the most exciting thing you've seen at EC17 this week?
Oh my God, I don't even know where to start. I mean, if you, well, that's a longer question. I mean, it's amazing, first of all. This building is amazing. The little things that are happening on the side and the front and the back, and it's just been nonstop. I mean, I hear physics making, like, blowing up stuff. I don't know what they're doing. This is amazing things,
yeah,
you know?
Cool.
There's a man who built this little thing out of brick blocks over there. I think it took him like an hour. And this little two-year-old walked over. And I was like, what happens if I pull this out? And the whole thing falls. And I felt myself get so like, what are you doing? Like all of that work. And the kid was like, that was great, right?
Yeah.
And it was like, okay, that's what we're here for. We're here to create. We're here to mess up some stuff. We're here to learn. And so I think I don't have one thing. I'm just really glad to be in this space with educators who get it and who want to make a difference. That's powerful to be around.
Yeah, awesome. Now, in one sentence, if you could give like a little bit of advice to an educator that's starting out or trying to make a difference, what would you tell them? I mean, it can be two sentences or three sentences if you want, but you know.
Well, I would tell them a quote, my favorite quote by Howard Thurman. And the quote says, don't ask what the world needs. Ask what makes you come alive and go do that. Because what the world needs is more people who have come alive. And so I encourage educators that in this work, when you get to the place you don't love it no more, leave it. But while you love it, do all you can just to be the best you can for the students.
That is spectacular advice. Thank you so much for your time. It's been awesome talking to you.
Yeah, you too. I appreciate it.
All right, so I'm here with Andrew. Andrew, can you tell us who you are, what you do, and why you do it?
Sure. So I'm a deputy principal at Bundaberg State High School. Prior to that, I was a maths hod at Maryborough, and before that, I was a maths teacher and an IT teacher at Vicky Point State High. So, yeah, that's me.
So what got you into teaching? What led you to teaching?
I didn't get the OP that I needed to do video game design, so I did maths, IT, and education. And it wasn't until the third year at Griffith that they, I guess, allowed you to go and do prac. But once I got into my prac, so I was like, boom, this is me.
Okay. What excites you most about being a teacher? Like, what sort of stuff are you working on day to day that, like, makes you wake up and say, yeah, I get to go to work today?
Alrighty. So currently as a DP, I do quite a lot of stuff with at-risk students, and it's getting them to see that, you know what, maybe they're not successful in this type of schooling, but there are other ways or other pathways that they can get into that gets them on board, back re-engaging in the community, being contributing members of society. That's what gets me going.
Now, you guys have done a lot of work on transforming your school in the last few years, haven't you? What can you tell me, like, one thing that, you know, you are most proud of that's happened as a result of that journey?
All right. So the Bundaberg State High School transformation has been a long time coming. I've been there for a short period of that time.
Mm-hmm.
But the re-engaging programs that we run, if you're a boy, if you're a girl, if you're Indigenous, if you're at risk, if you don't have parents who can take care of you, there's a lot of support programs there. And look, when you see one student who comes back, who joins mainstream and they've been successful, and they give you that smile and they nod, and you just go, yeah, I'm the guy that we got that down pat. We saved that one kid. And that's what makes me get to school every day.
Yeah, it's magical. So what has been your favorite part about hanging out at EC17 this week?
It's having this collective genius. Like, this is my first EC, and all I can say is, like, I could just imagine if we all just left our schools and created like a super school, it would be amazing. Like the amount of innovation, the momentum, it would just be world class. So it's exciting being with all these like-minded people.
Yeah, awesome. Just one more thing, any tidbits of advice that you could give to an educator who's starting out or someone who's trying to start making a change?
Just do it. That's basically it. Hey, like there's no superpower like in people. They just need to give it a go. And I guess just starting is like half the battle. If you start, the rest will follow.
Hi, everyone. My name's Beck McCauley from the Beacon Foundation. My title is Facilitation and Training Manager for the Beacon Foundation. I work for an arm of the Beacon Foundation, which is involved in the running of what we call our high impact programs, which are work readiness, one day work readiness programs for young people, secondary school level. So we run programs for young people from year 7 right through to year 12 to help get them ready for the world of work, for further education, and basically just to do awesome stuff with their lives.
Great. Now, how did you get into working with the Beacon Foundation?
Good question. So my entry into the Beacon Foundation is a story that I tell a lot in my programs because it's a story about networking. It was who I knew, not what I knew at the time, that got me the job, the role at the Beacon Foundation. I'd heard a little bit about the Beacon Foundation. I really liked the idea of working for a not-for-profit. I have a teaching background, so I really wanted to get back to working with young people. And I also wanted to use my transferable skills, if you like, which have come from the film industry and the performance space, to do what I consider to be, I call it heart work, work that had meaning for me. And Beacon Foundation and my skill set were a really great alignment.
And that's really amazing. And I'm just going to put in a plug for the founder of the Beacon Foundation because he was interviewed by Richard Feidler on Conversations a while ago. And the story behind the setting up of the Beacon Foundation is really, really fascinating. What is your favourite part about your work?
Oh, without doubt, it's the young people that I get to meet and work with every day and the stories that I hear. They're extraordinary. Young people have so much wisdom to share and what I love, I guess, is that while we're all different and unique and diverse, we have so much in common, and I love that shared humanity that we discover in our programs. Even though they're work readiness programs, I think of them as being life skills programs. The other day I asked a student what animal they'd be if they were an animal and why, and she said dolphin. And I thought, yeah, that's a common one because young people think of that as being a good way to answer the question in an interview. Dolphin, I'd be a dolphin because they're good at working in teams and they're intelligent. But she didn't say that at all. She said, I'd be a dolphin because, and I should just say at this point, she was a Syrian refugee. She hadn't been in the country for very long. She said, I'd be a dolphin because when we escaped my country, we were on a boat and the navigational equipment instruments, they broke and we were lost at sea and had no idea where we were and how to find land. And a pod of dolphins came and showed us the way to land.
Wow.
And that's why I want to be a dolphin, because I want to show people the way to a better life.
That is, like, that's bringing tears to my eyes and giving me goosebumps and all of those things. That is just so magnificent. What's been your favourite thing about hanging out at EC this week?
Oh, absolutely the people that I've met. There are so many innovative, enthusiastic, positive people in the education space who really want to implement wonderful changes and to be, leaders in terms of new ideas and ways of working and educating young people. And I just think that it's really been very stimulating and friendly, incredibly friendly.
It is just such a positive space. There's one last question. If you had to give a bit of advice to a young educator starting out, what would that be?
I think it would be to be kind to yourself, because you're doing a job that is not just a job, it's a vocation. And so you have to be very invested in your in taking care of yourself. It's a big job. And when you take care of yourself and you're kind to yourself, I think that just emanates out into the classroom, and it makes you a much more empathetic person. And empathy in the classroom is probably your most powerful tool.
My name's Fairley. I'm a primary school teacher at Meredith Primary School, a rural primary school halfway between Geelong and Ballarat. And I work in a multi-age classroom, grade 4, 5 and 6, it's a very small school. So we get lots of exciting things happen.
That sounds like a really interesting teaching environment. What is the most exciting thing that sort of gets you out of bed in the morning about teaching like that mixed group?
We have a very country-minded group of kids who love being on a farm. They love the outdoors. I suppose they're not traditional kids. If you think of city kids liking technology and screen time, our kids aren't like that. That passion for the outdoors just makes us want to do stuff outdoors.
So what sort of things do you incorporate into your lessons that take you outdoors? Like, how do you embrace that?
I run it's called Meredith Makers program in our school, which we've used to make things like markets. We've had makers markets, we've had expos, we've had a whole lot of things in our school. So essentially we let our kids use saws and tools and drills, and we garden, we have chooks. What else do we do? Have to think. But yes, it's just not having that fear, because they know how to use tools better than I do. So not having that fear of letting them use the saw, it's like, go for it, boys. Make a table. That's fine. You need a table. You need a workbench. Make it. Yeah. Pellets. Great.
That's great. Yeah. I'm a firm believer that every kid should have a screwdriver, a hammer and a soldering iron, right?
As we all should.
Yeah. I think they're just useful skills for life. And getting kids to do that early is really, really, really awesome.
Yep. And it's those lifelong skills that you've got to have. You've got to build these kids to continue doing these things forever.
Yeah, totally. What has been the most exciting thing that you've seen in the last 2 days here?
I love coming here because it's just, there's so many different things. And I suppose it's a little bit of an affirmation that what I do in my small school is the right thing, is a great thing. And I get to see other people doing those great things and then take them back and incorporate little bits at a time into my own classroom and school, and teach other teachers in my school and in the area to join in and have fun with education, because it's got to be fun.
It's awesome. Just one last thing. If you were giving advice to a young educator who's either starting out or starting to try and make a change, what would you tell them?
Don't be afraid of your ideas. Your ideas are always good ideas. Just have the bravery, be brave enough to give it a go. Things won't work all the time. We're not born to work all the time. So just give it a go. If it works, build on it and keep going, and just keep pushing the boundaries.
Dan, can you tell everybody who doesn't know who you are what you do?
Okay, so MyEd's a platform, and basically we're passionate about personalised learning. The thing we want to see is a world where every student is challenged to reach their full potential, and that the organisations that teachers work within, they actually empower them to do that using technology.
Awesome. Now, what is the most exciting thing that you've seen at EC17 this week?
Well, the most exciting thing that happened to me at EC17 was I got quite scared by a balloon that was exploding from somewhere that I'm not going to name names, but I'm pretty sure I know who did that now. I don't know. Look, catching up with our friends from High Tech High, Laura McBain and Randy, that was amazing. There's just so many amazing people. I would find it difficult to pin it down to one group, I'd say. It's just generally the feeling of hope that exists in the place for the possibilities that education could be. I don't know. That's the only way I can describe it.
Yeah, that's really, really interesting. Now, you obviously work with, personalising education for kids. What do you hope that MyEd can do in the next 5 years for education?
What I'd love to see MyEd do is I'd love to see it be a place where it really blurs the line between who are the educators and who are the learners. So who are the students, who are the teachers? And we see, students creating a lot more content for their peers. Because I think really, if we want to tap into the intrinsic motivations that really drive people to want to learn, and then beyond that, take that learning to do positive things in the world, then I think that comes from within the communities that are actually formed. So, I guess it's just self-driven learning communities at a global scale.
Yeah, so something big's happening just behind us. So there is a little bit more noise because there's lots of stuff happening at EC17 this week. So you're talking about the students creating content, the students driving the learning. Have you seen kids do some amazing stuff on the MyEd platform already, or is that something that we're working towards achieving?
Last year I was fortunate enough to be able to take a step back and go and teach some primary school kids, grade 3-4. Which blew my mind apart. I was a second year teacher. I thought I had this nailed. Like, I taught 250 year 9 students. How hard could it be? A bunch of grade 3-4s, 8 and 9 year olds. They totally
made my mind implode, because I walked in there and I had students who had a great, she was 9 years of age, she could do quadratic equations in the same room as a kid who couldn't tell the time on his watch. And they were, you know, I couldn't keep up with the amount of work that they needed across that spectrum. So we created what's known as a quest creator program and then the student instructor program. So we had kids making quests, and I had, you know, the one thing I remember is I had a girl create a quest, and it was to teach measurement using horses as a vehicle. And I didn't know this, but apparently bridles have different thicknesses and millimeters and all this sort of stuff. And I've never seen a bunch of kids more motivated to learn about measurement. I would never have thought of that in my wildest dreams. I don't know about horses. I don't know about this stuff. But she understood her peer group, and she understood the sorts of things they were interested in. And so, you know, that's the sort of stories we want to create more of.
That's fantastic. Now, if you had to give like a one sentence piece of advice to someone either entering education or entering a sphere where they're working, you know, with educators, what would you tell them?
Just be aware of your self-limiting beliefs. You know, my story is I went into a primary school thinking that the kids needed me to show them the way, and honestly, they showed me the way. And that just happened to me over and over again. And I just think that's, you know, you keep your eyes open for what your self-limiting beliefs are, and that's the way forward.
So I'm here with Penny right now. Penny, can you tell everyone who you are and what you do and why you do it?
Yep. Okay. I'm the director of Ginny and Penny, and we have a set of materials for children aged 3 to 8, teaching ethics, empathy, and emotional intelligence. The materials have been developed in consultation with 3 high-level academics, Professor Doreen Rosenthal, who's a developmental psychologist, Dr. Jeanette Poulton, who is a Doctor of Education and sits on the board of Victorian, Australasian and International Associations of Philosophy in Schools, and a Doctor of Linguistics. So we've developed these materials because we have a very deep belief that children need to learn about empathy and ethical behaviour, and we want them to, through these materials, raise their emotional intelligence. We've published the books in China into schools, and we've today at the EC17 we are launching our Australian books and materials here.
That is super exciting. Now, just so that people who can't see, because, I mean, audio is terrible for describing stuff, right? We've got these awesome books with these gorgeous characters in them, and they're stories of, like, persistence and self-identity where these animals come across a challenge, and it's how they solve that challenge, right?
Correct. And there's a lot of, first of all, the materials are based on the early years learning framework, and each book, and I'm going to demonstrate to you, no one else can see this, but each book is actually has a major learning outcome and then further learning outcomes all from the framework. And at the back of each book are a series of open-ended questions that teachers can use to discuss lots and lots of issues, both between the characters and internal conflict. So each book has got both talk bubbles and think bubbles. Sometimes a character might be thinking one thing and saying another. We've also got, at the back of each book is a QR code that accesses individual animated story reads of the books, great for teachers projecting them onto digital whiteboards or onto personal devices. And we have a teacher resource that goes with the books, which was written by a head of an early learning centre. So it's pretty comprehensive.
Yeah, that's really, really cool. What's been your favourite, most exciting thing about being at EC17 this week?
The vibe. I just think, well, this is our first foray into this kind of thing, and my partner Winnie Zhou and myself were at a workshop at Education Changemakers, and we, you know, obviously knew about this, and we thought, yes, we're going to take the plunge, and we're here, and we've loved talking to the teachers, we've loved showing people our materials, we've had great response. It's a really lovely vibe, and I think Aaron and Dave have done a great job.
Yeah, it is. It's been a pretty, pretty awesome event. Now, Penny, thank you so much for your time. It's been great talking to you.
My pleasure.
Hey, my name's Meg Foley. I'm from St. Peter's Lutheran College in Brisbane. I've been a teacher for 11 years and have taught like the middle years, ages, 5, 6, 7. And I guess I just see education as the way forward to positive change around the world. So that's why I love my job.
Excellent. Now, you said that you love your job. Is there something in particular that you're working on or you've done recently that has reaffirmed that love for what you do?
Yeah, definitely. So as well as being a classroom teacher, I'm a big advocate and involved with robotics. And at my school, it's an extracurricular activity. And when I walk into the room, I just see genuine learning. It's that state of flow that is spoken about a lot, where the kids are just losing track of time because of what they do. So I'm trying to find a way of creating that on another level. So if I can set up a school that is for engineering, just like there are amazing schools for music or whatever other excellence areas, and try and find that genuine, real learning, deep learning, and do what I can with that to continue to go on that journey with kids to find ways of creating change.
Have you had a particular student that's completely surprised you when you've handed them a robot?
Absolutely. One student was in my class in year 7. I remember him hiding under a desk in the fetal position rocking when he had to do an oral presentation. And he wouldn't come to school. He had massive school avoidance. He'd come to school at like 11 o'clock in the morning. Now he is coming to school at 7:30, so he can do robotics before school. He recently just got back from Washington, where he was part of the team representing Australia at the first global challenge. And he did, I think, over 20 media presentations and was on TV, radio, newspapers around the world. So I see that it's given him a voice, it's given him a focus, and it's allowed him to be who he is, and he's got a future.
That's really, really, really awesome. So what has been your favourite thing about hanging out at EC17 this week?
The yes idea and attitude. Ideas here are crazy, they're exciting, they're huge, but no one's saying no, it can't be done. And it's so inspiring. It's like a breath of fresh air that you can just dream, but that those dreams can be supported and put into action by the amazing people that are here at this conference.
It's a very, very common sentiment among everyone I'm talking to. It's just an awesome vibe going on here.
Yeah,
now, just one more question. If you had a little bit of advice you could give an educator that's starting out, what would you tell them?
Stay true to yourself. Don't let the system corrupt you. and find your tribe. Find people that have the same vision as you and make it happen.
My name is June Bea, and I started a company called Bea Group. What I do is try to get other people to pay for cool ideas that organizations, individuals may have, especially if it's around education and innovation. I like disrupting education, and especially right now with state and different government funding. So I've been doing it for a long time, and now I've been doing it for my own company, doing it with places that are really doing good work. So I get fired up seeing how kids get really excited to learn, where they just see what's possible for their lives, and especially if they have a say in what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a huge fan of students having a voice, having some choice, and really seeing what inspires them.
Can you give us a quick example of a cool project that you've worked on that's led to these kids getting super inspired and super excited about stuff?
Yes. So I'm working at a community called Downey Unified in Southern California. And through a $6 million grant that I helped write, I'm helping them implement. And we've been partnering with an organization called the Science and Entertainment Exchange in the States. They're part of the National Academy of Science. And they're the 1-800 call scientists for movie advisors. So, for example, when the movie Doctor Strange came out, there was a special event that was the Science of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And we had a group of high schoolers who were able to borrow a robot from SoftBank Robotics, and they programmed the robot to do 5 different Marvel characters and iconic moves. And then through that process, they had 12 days to learn how to program this and create a presentation and then practice it well enough so they could present to a scientist from SETI, a scientist from Stanford, Johns Hopkins, and she's a woman who is a stunt woman as well as a scientist. So they presented to this panel, and they had questions and answers, and we did a survey with the students afterwards, and they just were so excited that they were able to learn how to program the robot and then feel prepared to present to a panel of professionals. And so it was, and then at the same time, they got to walk around this Hall of Heroes where they saw Captain America's suit and Thor's hammer and Ant-Man's mask. And these are kids who come from a community that don't have a whole lot of resources. 70% qualify for free and reduced lunch. And so just to see them, see what's possible, totally makes my day.
Audio is really bad for this, but nobody can see how excited my face is right now. Like, that is so super exciting. What is the coolest thing you've seen whilst you've been at EC17 this week?
Oh, the coolest thing is just meeting people who are so passionate about young people, about living and walking the walk with really having students participate in projects, having families. There was a woman who spoke about how she works with the community, visiting families 6 months before they start school. I just thought, what an amazing idea. And she, her takeaway or her advice to us was just smile and say hello. It doesn't cost anything. And I just felt like that's something we can all do. And it really does make a difference. So I'm super excited to be here and inspired.
Cool. All right, just one more question. If you could give a piece of advice to someone starting out in education, like in a sentence, what would you tell them?
Gosh, so I am a kind of a fraud. I've never taught. I come at it from a researcher perspective. So what I would say is do it because you love it and that you love kids, because it comes across, and kids will do anything if they feel respected and they feel valued and that you have high expectations for them.
That is super fantastic advice. Thank you so much for your time. All right, so I'm here with Sarah from Canine Comprehension. Sarah, for people who don't know who you are, can you just describe what you do and who you are and why you do it?
So I am the director of Canine Comprehension, and I founded the business. We try to make learning fun using dogs as a tool to get kids more engaged with their learning. So we go around to schools in all across Melbourne, and we work a program that's an 8-week program, getting the kids to understand their own learning, getting them to understand what motivates them by training a dog and using the dog as the point of talking. It's me, and at the moment we've got 8 tutors going around the place and a couple of dog trainers, and yeah, I get to spend time with both animals and kids, so life's good.
But some people say that you shouldn't work with children or animals. How do you find that in practice?
Well, there are some days. Because I very much see the dogs as not performance animals. They're there so we can point out their emotions, their blocks in learning. So whatever happens, happens. And my job, my tutor's job, is to be able to use that in the lesson. And so there's some days my biggest dog, Minnie, will go and be scared, or she's just not sure about meeting new people. So it gives us an opportunity to talk about what happens when you're meeting new people and you're in a social situation where you'd rather not be there. And so we can help get them to understand other skills by using the dogs, rather than just saying to kids, what are you frightened of? How do we fix it? So.
Fantastic. So what's the most exciting thing you've seen at EC17 this week?
Oh, gosh, this has been a really great... I'm often a little island unto myself, and I hire teachers and therapists and other people, but I don't get to just move around and talk to teachers. And to have a group of people that are so dynamic in their thinking and thinking outside the square, I just feel like I'm amongst my people here. So just wandering around to everything and just talking to people and finding out other small businesses that people have sort of done the same thing as me, that they've gone, oh, this isn't working, here's a little niche, and it's spreading like that. So I realize that I'm not by myself in finding these small parts of education that can help kids. It's a little bit different.
Do you have a story you can tell us about, like, one of the best things that's happened when you've had these dogs in a room with some kids?
I've got... as a parent, you're not meant to have a favourite. As a teacher, can you have favourites? I have a few favourites. There's a child that I started tutoring. He was living at a residential care home, and when we first met, it was like the kid couldn't stop swearing at you, and he was very violent. And I would have to come in just with the dog and myself, and not even bring pencil cases and pens and those sort of things, because you don't know how he's going to use them. So it became very apparent, though, that he wanted the connection with the dogs. He didn't want to hurt the dogs. He did want to scare the people, because adults had let him down time and time again. But that, me bringing in especially Oscar to begin with, and because Oscar's such a chilled out guy, really allowed me to have a relationship with this young person. And this young person got big just because of the nature of residential care, got moved from place to place to place, and we were lucky enough to keep on being funded, and we followed him. So we were the only constant in his life. And, you know, it took me a good 6 months to be able to get him to hold a book and to start reading again, or to pick up a pen. Nowadays, we're working on a business for him, and so he's doing a small BMX business, and he's really got a lot of confidence with working with his hands, and we've even had done his budget and planning. And so the fact that he's focused, and he allows me to tell him and to guide him when he's right and where he's wrong, and we can use real-life scenarios to work, he's just come such a long way, and I've been so lucky to be part of that journey. Yeah.
That is really, really fantastic. Now, just lastly, if you could give a sentence of advice to a new educator or someone starting out working anywhere in education, what would you tell them?
Follow your passions. And if it seems a little weird at first, just keep going, and you'll find your tribe. You'll find people who think it's weird and great and love it too.
My name's Nicole. I am co-founder of Verge Young Entrepreneurs, and what we do is it's a curriculum embedded program in both business and English, where we ask Year 9 students to take on the role of social entrepreneur and come up with their own solutions to solve some of society's problems.
That's really cool. What inspired you to start running these programs?
Look, quite a few things. One, my big passion is making sure that learning links to life. So I love curriculum that actually asks students to take on a role that connects them to something in the real world. And I'm particularly passionate about social entrepreneurship because I feel like it creates a space for young people to develop real empathy for some of the challenges that exist out in their world. They may not be exposed to in traditional curriculum settings. So it's the perfect vehicle, and we use project-based learning as the driver for students to take authorship and ownership over their learning journey and really create something that reflects their passions and their loves and something they're interested in.
Yeah, awesome. Now, I got to meet a few of your students last year, and they were some amazing humans. Do you want to tell us about maybe one of the kids that's gone on to do some cool things as a result?
Only one. Okay. So last year we brought 11 students down, and one of the students was Jordan from Mental Music, and he started a mental health podcast, which you can check out on iTunes, that is basically run by teenagers for teenagers. And his big passion is that he wants to reduce the stigma around mental health and make it something that young people feel comfortable talking about. And at the same time, he also wants to engage professionals in a dialogue with young people so that it becomes a space where young people can access more information about mental health and how to look after themselves. What's really cool is he also takes music developed by young people and plays it in the podcast too. So he's kind of supporting young artists and creatives, because I know the research talks about how important it is to engage in art and music as a form of therapy for some of the mental health conditions. So he's incredible. We brought him down to Melbourne, and he was, I taught him at the time, and I felt like he was a really quiet kid. And this kid worked a room like nobody's business. Like, he was around networking like a legend. And I've never seen a 14-year-old kid own a space with some of the most legendary entrepreneurs at the time. And he just walked up and introduced himself and talked about how what he was doing and how they could engage and help and support him. So watching a young person that wouldn't have seen entrepreneurship necessarily as a journey option for him moving forward, own it and love it and actually have this moment of realization where he went, you know what, this is my jam and this is what I'm going to do. So that's one example. Our finalists that we brought down this year have actually already started their social enterprises, which is something that they didn't have to do, but they've created the product. They're actually selling it to people, and they were asked at the end of the pitch, like, how they juggle being a full-time student along with these amazing social enterprises that they're also doing. And the response from one of the girls was incredible. She just kind of looked at the person that asked the question and went, well, it doesn't feel like work when you love it. And that was just an incredible moment for me to know that what we do in the classroom and how we create these really meaningful and purposeful learning experiences, how that can actually shift the entire trajectory for a young person.
That's really cool. Yeah, out of all the kids I met when you brought them down this last year, Jordan is the one name I remember. Like, he is an exceptional kid and a very, very cool young kid. What is the most exciting thing you've seen at EC17 this week?
Oh, physics blowing stuff up. Amazing. I don't know where to start. I think the one thing I love about EC17 or any of the EC events is that you've got these incredible educators who are on the ground doing crazy good stuff, who have this space that they can actually share their practice. And I know traditionally when I go to education events, there might be 2 days full of speakers, but there's really only one person that I want to see, because the majority of others are doing the education circuit and I've seen them 500 times before. Every time I've walked up to any of the sessions that have been on, it's struck me how genuine and incredible these individuals are and how powerful their talking spaces are. So I've just been blown away by the everyday heroes that are wandering around here today doing incredible stuff and sharing their practice. And I keep hearing from other educators that whole message of, wow, like, these people are just doers, like, they're just doing stuff. And that's a really impactful and powerful thing for educators, I think, to see. You don't have to be this crazy individual doing, you know, in this perfect school to do perfect, amazing things. You just have to wake up in the morning and go, I'm going to give it a crack.
Yeah, that's awesome. Now, just quickly, if you could give one piece of advice to a young educator starting out or starting to try and make a difference, what would you tell them?
Just keep asking questions and don't be afraid to give things a go. So people often ask, I have incredible entrepreneurs sit on our panels for Verge, and they often say, how do you get these people to sit on panels, to give up their incredibly busy schedules and spend time sitting on a panel for 14-year-olds? And the response that I always give is, I just ask. And so if I had to give any message to young educators, it would be, if you have a great idea, if you know the person you have to talk to make it happen, just ask. The worst that will happen is they'll say no, and then you just ask the next person and you keep asking and you keep asking until you get the answer that you want.
All right, so I'm here with Sarah from Reboot Education. Sarah, can you tell anyone who hasn't heard about what you do and why you do it?
Hi, Holly. Lovely to speak with you. We look at staff training and student workshops. We're all about empowering kids. So what we do is we provide tools that people can use in a classroom setting, in a whole school setting. Great language, simple language that is based in neuroscience and trauma-informed to help young people understand what they're thinking, what they're feeling, and how to move forward in life.
That's really amazing. Now, what inspired you to get into doing this?
I had PTSD myself and I recovered. And what I could see out there are millions and millions of young people who are confused and angry and upset and uncertain. And life is just getting faster, more confusing. So we need clarity and we need a sense of purpose, but we also need to be really grounded and strong within ourselves. The best place to get that is probably in a classroom. You're getting thousands, and obviously at home too, but in a classroom setting, you're getting thousands and thousands of repetitions of teacher-student interaction. If we can give teachers really simple language to grab students and give them the awareness of how they're feeling and what they need, then we're really empowering young people to move forward in a really positive way.
It's amazing. Can you tell me very quickly about somewhere where this has been really, like, a short story about something that has happened in one of your programs that's been amazing?
Sure. There's a primary school that I probably shouldn't mention by name, mm-hmm. but it had the highest number of suspensions in the entire state. This primary school is also known as the jungle. Staff are really stressed. The young people are lovely young people, but come from really chaotic backgrounds. When we went in with the program, we were having a suspension rate of about 15 per week. So 15 primary school suspensions a week, that's really significant. It dropped down to 2 per week after 3 months of the program. So young people understanding, oh my God, I'm in wild brain, what do I need to feel better? They were able to actually articulate that, and rather than saying, oh, F off and throw a chair and scream or punch, they were starting to self-regulate themselves and starting to regulate each other. So they could see that their peer needed help and they'd step in and say, hey, mate, what can I do to help you and support you, as opposed to reacting to situations. So we want young people who can respond. We want them to take their power back. And a big piece of language we use is, have you got your power or have you given it away? And when you give your power away, then you're reacting to the world and you're becoming a victim. We want them to take their power back, get into the chair, get the learning happening, become learning tenacious enough that they can deal with their self-doubt. They can move all the way through, achieve in schools, and actually feel really proud of themselves.
That's really amazing. What's the most exciting thing you've seen at EC17 this week?
Obviously us. Secondly, it would be you, Holly. But I actually haven't had much chance to walk around yet. I'm just about to start that process. I just met the guys from TES and Smart Teachers. I thought that was really interesting, the platform that they've got there and the level of sharing that's going on in Australia. That was terrific. And I'm going to go and check out all the other wonderful stands, hopefully very soon.
Fantastic. Now, if you could give a piece of advice to either a new educator or someone who's been doing it forever or just someone starting out, what would you tell them?
Student-teacher relationship is absolutely everything, and research shows pretty clearly that the level of emotional intelligence of the person who's standing at the front of the class dictates the classroom climate. So the more you've really got your own stuff together, the more you understand who you are and what you're doing, and you've got your intention and your passion really clear, plus you've got your ability to self-regulate, because teaching is incredibly hard work. And you are going to be thrown doozies and challenges on a daily basis. So are you strong enough to be able to cope with that? I think teachers having lots of professional supervision and support is critically important, especially in low socioeconomic settings. It's so tricky.
This is the Physics Ed Podcast. We're all about science, ed tech and more. To see 100 fun free experiments you can do with your class, go to physicseducation.com.au. That's physics spelled F-I-Z-Z-I-C-S. And click 100 free experiments.
And that was just some of the people who were at EduChange. It was a seriously vibrant event, and I really recommend if you turn up to EC18, it is well worth your time. Hey, if you're wondering what the Education Changemakers have been getting up to, check out episode 3 way back when we started this, where we got to speak with Maddie and Luke from the Education Changemakers about embedding language, culture and risk-taking into science lessons.
When I walked into, you know, Mimley School as a middle school teacher, and I was a teacher of everything then. I taught numeracy, mathematics, and even science, and I wasn't a science-trained person necessarily. It became very clear to me that unless this is engaging and actually taps into the current realities of the kids here, the audience, they are not going to engage. So I learned to become a very engaging teacher very quickly, and I did that really by saying, well, what matters to these kids? What's the hook of the lesson here? How does this attach to their world?
Thanks for listening to the Physics Ed Podcast. Sign up now for our fortnightly email newsletter. It's loaded with details on new experiments you can do, STEM teaching articles, new gadgets, exclusive offers, and upcoming events. Go to physicseducation.com.au. Scroll to the bottom and add your email.
Yes, definitely check out that episode. And by the way, Maddie and Luca also are involved with the EduChange podcast, which is a podcast where they get global innovators and thought leaders when it comes to teaching to have a bit of a chat with them too. And so it's definitely worth checking that out. And that just about brings us to the end of yet another Physics Ed podcast. Hey, thanks very much for listening. We'll catch you next week.
You've been listening to another Physics Ed podcast. We're excited about science. Subscribe to us on iTunes to download the next episode as soon as it's released. And don't forget, for hundreds of ideas, free experiments, our new Be Amazing book and more, go to physicseducation.com.au.